This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Edge of Sports podcast. I'm Dave Zirin. We are brought to you by The Nation Magazine, and I am joined by someone who's been on the show more than a little bit these last several months, basketball savant Arya Shirazi. I'm so excited for this show because finally, the finals are here. This is your NBA Finals preview. We have your Dallas Mavericks going up against the hated Boston Celtics. So many plot. I know that's a little editorializing right from the start. So many plot lines, so much to discuss. But before we get to the nitty-gritty of these finals, Arya Shirazi and I have to talk about the Western and Eastern Conference finals, the Final Four. We'll get to the finals in a hop and a skip, but we got to do like a quick assessment here. Arya, how you doing, sir?
Doing good, Holmes. Thank you.
All right, let's start with the West. You were rock-ribbed that the T-Wolves were going to make this past the Mavs. I forget if you said it was going to be in somewhat easy fashion, but in five games. Yeah, you had the T-Wolves over the Mavs in five. I said, if you remember, Dallas in seven. Very difficult series. And you were incredulous at the game, at the in seven part, because you said Dallas is not going to win on the T-Wolves' home floor, which, of course, they did in five. But we were both wrong as to the tenor of this. Like, I thought it would be incredibly tough victory, but Dallas emerging, you, of course, said what you said. But, you know, in game five, the Mavs put it away easily by 21 on the home floor. Shiraz, in your estimation, what the heck happened to the T-Wolves?
Almost a week later, I am still incredulous as to how it all went down. I could not have been more wrong. Every way that I saw this series happened on the other side. I knew that with the possible exception of playing Denver, I feel like the Mavs have the best player in any series or any game. So I knew what they were looking like at the top, and the top is Doncic and Kyrie Irving, who you and I had discussed at length recently. And so I knew who the Mavericks were, and I knew how the Mavericks were playing, and have been thrilled about it pretty much since the All-Star break, since they've been, I don't know, the best team in the NBA. But in looking at this West Finals matchup with Minnesota, as I said, I saw exactly what did not happen happening, knowing how incredible Luka is. I thought Minnesota had maybe the singular best defender to make Luka's performances inefficient, to make Luka work for his touches and his shots and his points. I'm a big believer of Jaden McDaniels. I think he was a huge part of Minnesota's season-long success and a huge, at times slightly underspoken of, part of their number one defense. So I thought, again, they had the ideal perimeter defender, and that perimeter defender with that length and mobility, which is what makes him such an effective one-on-one perimeter defender. I thought that he was positioned to really give Luka a hard time and take Luka away from his comfort spots. Kyrie is Kyrie, the best second option to have in the entire league. But I like the rest of what Minnesota was putting out there better. What wound up happening was it didn't matter who was guarding Doncic. He was such the best player in this series that, in a way, that is the story of the series. Luka did whatever he wanted in pretty much every game. And in a game five where the Wolves were relieved that they had not been swept and were back on their home court with potential momentum, and very, very premature murmurs of, well, no team has ever come back out of a 3-0 hole, but here we are. Could the Wolves be the team? And that first quarter that Doncic put up, I think he scored at least 20, but it seemed like every possession he stepped back an additional 3 feet and drained a three. And it was almost like midway through the first, the Timberwolves' body language was, well, if he's just going to make these kind of shots, then we're not going to win.
Yeah, what are we doing here?
And that was the story of the game. So before I give you a chance to say what you saw, it was really – Luka is Luka.
Yes.
And I don't feel as though – you know, the star power on Minnesota's side, which I had put my firm belief in and really delivered consistently throughout the year – I was ready for Townsend Edwards to take on Doncic and Irving. I was ready for two stars to take on two stars with the support of what I felt was a better supporting cast, a better remainder of the roster. I was really looking to those two main guys for Mini stepping up on their biggest stage ever, and they did not. They each had some good games. They're both great players, but neither of them was close to being the dominant player in this series, and very rarely were the dominant point on their own team.
No. Sorry. Go ahead. These are two all-stars, and neither of them played like all-stars. And Towns had a couple of games that are just like stinkers for the record book. He came back in the one win, but even that, and everybody was praising him, he scored 25 points on 9-for-20 shooting. Good game. It's better than shooting 3-for-18, no question. But we're talking about the playoffs, man, where we want to see people, you know, 30 points, 10 boards, you know, really playing a level up, because you're playing more minutes and assumedly also playing harder. So we want to see a statistical bump, not 25 points on 9-for-20 shooting, and everybody says, oh, Towns, he's showing up for the playoffs. It's like, come on. Interestingly, that one game that the T-Wolves won, that was the game without Derek Lively. And to me, he was easily the third best player in the series, period. And the fact that he's only 20 years old, and the fact that he and Gafford, you have to say, police the rim better than Rudy Gobert. Another thing that you wouldn't say. I mean, based on points in the paint, based on layup proficiency, based on number of dunks. I mean, Gafford and Gobert. And I mean, Gafford and Lively. And I got to tell you, you know, being the Washington Wizards diehard that I am, seeing Daniel Gafford, you know, maul his way to the finals has been a lovely thing to see. So basically, you know, I picked Dallas at the start of the playoffs. I picked them to here because it just seemed like a bet to say that what we've seen over half a season can be replicated. And like you said, they were the second best team in the NBA, and, you know, and the best team in the Western Conference once they retooled their roster. And what a retooling it was. When have we ever seen this before? A team doing a massive retool middle of the season, trading for people, trades that were very criticized at the time. They were giving up a ton of draft capital. They gave up on Grant Williams, who they paid a lot for. They bring in PJ Washington. They start Derek Jones. They bring in Daniel Gafford. And all of a sudden, they're this new team. And I've just never seen a team remake itself on the fly and do so well. And the fact that they're on this heater that's lasting months with this new squad is why I think they have a, as you will hear in a moment, a very much a fighting chance against the Boston Celtics.
Well, as a Wizards fan, I'm glad that you got a chance to get a tiny bit of vicarious joy through Daniel Gafford. So congrats to you for that. No, it was the middle. It was the inside game of the two teams, which is why I gave the decisive advantage to the Timberwolves. And as I said, as you said, and I completely agree, it was that two-headed center for the Mavs that absolutely was, I think, the ultimate deciding factor. Everything I thought Minnesota's big guys would do, Dallas's guys did. Lively, and particularly Gafford, ex-Washington Wizard Daniel Gafford, absolutely were more fearsome rim protectors than Gobert was. They were much more of a factor in the middle, which certainly was somewhat unanticipated. And it was not Gobert being the recipient of multiple alley-oop dunks as a result of the defensive attention towards Town and Edwards. It was Gafford and Lively, which seemingly were getting uncontested alley-oop dunks throughout the entire game, every game. So usually when you wrap up a series in five games, it's not an accident. And this one certainly was not. The Mavericks had a great approach towards Minnesota. They were the better team. They took the first two games on the road and then did not relinquish that, and didn't look like they were truly in danger of relinquishing that. You had said that you felt Lively was the third best player in the series. I assume that you were taking it as a given that Irving was second best player in the series. I didn't necessarily feel that way. I thought Kyrie had one game where Luka was missing shots down this in crunch time, and Kyrie was the closer for that one game. I think it was game two, which was the perfect example of, oh, well, you know, what are you really going to do? And was the perfect example of what you and I had devoted an entire show to a short time ago. But I didn't even think Irving played great. So it really was a total team effort. It's interesting. I have not given Jason Kidd a great deal of credit as a head coach through his multiple stops. And not that he's had that many accomplishments to deserve a lot of credit, but I've been easy to criticize or dismiss Kidd as a coach and over the past decade. And I'm not sure why, because I love Jason Kidd as a player. However he game planned for this Western Conference final series, it absolutely worked. And the better team is in the championship.
That's right. That's right. I mean, and I frankly take the fact that we did an entire episode about Luka and Kyrie about a month or so back to be a sign in retrospect that, you know, we were seeing something special develop. And there's something very gratifying, you know, and that's one of the things I love about sports, it's seeing this narrative play out of, hey, something's cooking here that's a level up above what we're generally seeing right now. And now to see that translate into a finals appearance is very cool.
Well, Stan Van Gundy has hopped on our bandwagon. He was crowing for a few games about how Irving and Doncic are the most talented scoring backcourt he's ever seen. And whoa, he knows that's going to generate a lot of controversy and a lot of clucks. But he stands by that. And I was like, man, we were saying that, you know, in the spring, early spring. So
As a hater of so many of these people, I like Stan.
I like Stan too. And I'm just saying, you know, he finally came up with something that you and I agreed upon much earlier.
Yeah, it took him a second. All right. This, I think, will go by much, much faster because I'm itching to get to the finals. But Boston, Indiana, I forget if I had Boston in a sweep or if I said I did say a sweep. Okay. Shiraz is confirming that because there was a part of me that also thought, well, Boston will yak up a game. And they almost did. They almost yacked up several games. But I watched every game of that series, Shiraz. And the only thing I'll say about it is that, you know, three of the four games were quite close. But in looking back, or were quite close in the fourth quarter, I should say, and one went to OT with needing an incredible shot by Jaylen Brown just to get to OT. But in retrospect, it felt like Boston, even when the games were close, were just sort of playing with its food. You know, just, you know, like they were going to come back. They were going to hit multiple threes in a row. It felt almost like a given, like when you're, you know, in high school and you're playing the junior high in a full court game or something. And then junior high is winning and you're just like, okay, time to get serious. Let's just win. It had that feel to it that was almost insulting. And when you couple that with Rick Carlisle just looking whack as hell on numerous occasions, and this is what we got. And it's worth me pointing out that the Indiana Pacers have yet to win a game since Tyrese Halliburton wore the shirt of Reggie Miller choking himself after they beat the Knicks in seven. So call that the Tyrese jinx. The floor is yours, sir.
Now, I watched far less of this series than I did the one in the West. I was really uninspired by this matchup. I was not happy that the Pacers were the last team standing to try to prevent the Celtics from winning the East. And so I'm not speaking from as much firsthand knowledge of exactly what went down as I ordinarily would be. How things played out. I mean, how things ultimately played out is that four games were played and four games were won by Boston.
Mm-hmm.
And now they've had a long layoff, a lengthy layoff before the finals start in a couple of days. But your analysis can be looked at two ways. One is that, yes, really good teams and teams with championship aspirations can go through games where they're not playing their best, they're not at their sharpest, they don't even look like necessarily they're playing their hardest. And then when they have to win, they do. As you had said, I think Indiana was leading within 5 minutes of three of the four games.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Celts did what they had to do to ultimately close each one of them out. That can potentially bode well for a team that knows it can play much, much better and is still winning important games when they're not playing at their best. The flip side of that is, why aren't you playing at your best in the East Finals? And why is an Indiana team and an Indiana team which had either a not 100% or a not at all Halliburton for a few games, why is that team which is not considered one of the elite in the East still? Why were they either able to stay in games or really control the tempo of games against a team which thinks highly of itself and has already been through two playoff rounds? But then again, they could respond that, yeah, they've been through two playoff rounds, also not playing at their best in either one, and wrapped both of those up in five. So, so I don't really have any point except to say, who knows? The Celtics are not marching in here, I think, with that same momentum as Dallas. Boston is going in kind of saying, yep, everybody expected us to be here. We expected us to be here. And here we are. And, you know, if you're interested in seeing how we got here, then, you know, you can look at the past few weeks against a team who is, you know, has been playing better and better seemingly in every playoff round, starting each playoff series on the road with at least a lot of the interested basketball people thinking that they were not going to win any of those series.
That's right.
And
A lot of
not
folks were in on the Clips in the first round.
and they are not squeaking by. They have been the better team in every single one of those series. So that's kind of the trajectory that these two teams are on as they're meeting for the championship.
Wow, great pull, Shiraz, to get right to this championship contest. So it's Dallas versus Boston. Dallas, as you said, coming in with the momentum of being at the top of the most brutally tough conference in the NBA. And then Boston, you know, sort of gallivanting to the top of the East against injury-plagued teams or the Indiana Pacers, who might as well be injury-plagued because their coach is Rick Carlisle. Okay, so Dallas, Boston. The general argument that the Cognoscenti are saying is that Boston is going to win this series because they can play five out. All five players can shoot three-pointers, and they have the highest three-point shooting volume in the NBA, and that makes the Lively-Gafford combo just less impactful because Boston is just less dependent on going to the rim. Another reason people are saying Boston is that they're the best in the NBA at not fouling people. And Luka, of course, feasts at the foul line. And since they can play five out, and since their fourth best player is probably, you know, Kristaps Porzingis or Derek White, I mean, they're such a stacked roster. Jrue Holiday, who's might be the best player in the playoffs for Boston, him or Jaylen Brown. Boston, unlike Minnesota, will make Luka and Kyrie have to play much harder on defense because they really hid those guys as much as they could so they could be high powered on offense. And that Dallas has nobody to guard Jason Tatum. That's the argument. To all that, I say fooey. I say Dallas in six. That's my call. Shiraz, the floor is yours.
Well, first of all, is what exactly is the health status of Porzingis?
I can answer that. Definitely, they think 25 to 30 minutes a night.
Oh, starting in game one.
Starting in game one,
He's ready.
may not start because of Horford, but they're gonna downgrade Horford's minutes and have Kristaps out there.
Well, that is a big, big deal. That
And
is a
no Luke
big, big
Kornet.
deal. Boston has played without Zingas, I think, since maybe even game one of the first series, or very early in their first round series against Miami. Of course, he is a huge part of what they do, both on you know, primarily on offense, but also absolutely on defense. You know, you have that then you have three great defenders, perimeter defend, very good perimeter defenders in Boston with one all defensive player. But White and Brown are very good defenders too. And having a 7-3 guy on the back line has been kind of an essential component of what has made Boston's defense all year long. So him being able to play starters minutes from the start is going to be a huge factor and a huge advantage for Boston. It's you were saying, you know, who's going to guard Tatum? I consider Anthony Edwards as good an offensive player as Tatum. And who guarded him? I thought that would be a huge advantage for Minnesota, and it wasn't. Derek Jones guarded him, and then Josh Green guarded him, and then Dante Exum guarded him for a few possessions, and PJ. That's kind of what you do when you don't have a designated stopper. But I think that, you know, anybody asking, well, who's going to guard Tatum? I think that was answered with who's going to guard Edwards. If Tatum has a better offensive series than Edwards, then Boston will do better than Minnesota against the Mavs. But I don't think, but that to me is not such a, you know, Derek Jones has kind of stepped up as the de facto perimeter bust his ass guy on defense and has done a really, really great job in the playoffs. Jones has guarded Paul George and then Gilgeous and then Edwards. And Dallas won all three of those series. So
minimum salary player, by the way.
Who also seems to hit every open three-pointer he gets, and playing off of Doncic and Irving, he gets a lot of open three-pointers. And once or twice a game reminds you that he probably has the craziest ups in the entire league.
Amazing.
Still. And we're talking Derek Jones, maybe like the sixth or seventh most impactful Maverick, which again speaks well for Dallas and for Dallas's chances. The Mavericks definitely have the best player in the series. And with better depth, I think, with better depth off the bench. I've been saying that about Boston all year long, and they've kind of been proving me wrong. Boston's depth, they go about eight deep, and their bench guys have been actually a little more productive than I've ever wanted them to be. the center matchup, the two combinations that you can go with in Porzingis and Horford versus the two combinations that you can go with in Gafford and Lively. Yes, I give the advantage to Boston in that, certainly. But that should be a very interesting matchup of the big rotations and kind of whose style of play in the middle works and seems to be tilting the balance. You know, you had talked about the defense of Boston. And Jrue Holiday's defense, of course. But then again, Boston, they only have to play Doncic twice a year. They only have to play Jokic twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just saying,
you go.
What normally works usually doesn't work against the very best players.
And
that's why you want to have the very best players.
Yeah, and in Denver ate Boston's lunch twice. The Celtics beat the Mavericks both games, but the Mavericks, such flux with their lineup, I just don't even take that very seriously. They were still bringing it together. They never beat the Mavericks when the Mavericks were on this current heater. I'm putting a lot of faith in the idea that the team with the best player usually wins out. I mean, think about the 2022 finals where you had Steph was the best player, and then the next, you know, three or four best players were probably Celtics. And then Andrew Wiggins played way above his skis, and that's all Steph needed to do amazing Steph things. You know, and that was a shock that Andrew Wiggins stepped up in such a way. Think of all the players who it wouldn't be a shock if they stepped up for the Mavericks. Your Kyries, your Livelys, your Derek Jones, your PJ Washingtons, because they've all proved it in the playoffs already. I like the idea of rolling the dice with Luka Doncic, age 25, shocking the world and beating the Boston Celtics. I don't believe in this Celtics team. I don't believe in their coach. I don't believe in this five-out style, because if they're cold from three, they're not going to win. And I got to tell you, Jason Kidd, for all the times I've thought he was just a lousy coach coasting on his playing reputation as this point guard who sees the court, and I thought that was all just a bunch of hooey. And remember when he remember when he threw his drink on the floor? It was very clownish. And yet Jason Kidd has them buying in to what he wants to do, which is playing with a faster pace, the lob game. So my pick again is Mavericks in six. I like the idea of betting on the team with that's on a heater.
Well, I think as you've kind of broken down, so much is going to depend on Boston shooting. They really have relied, as you said, on their three-point shooting, on the fact that every one of their rotation players can hit from the outside or can even have big games from the outside. And their top offensive players are definitely good enough one-on-one in order to create looks for open three-point shooters. Obviously, a bit of a dramatic subplot is Irving returning to Boston. You know, if anybody's ever looking for any drama in a particular series, they can find it with that. And we've talked about it at length. It came up in their last series. Yeah, they clearly have the number one player in the series. But on any given night, they could have the second best player in the series. You know, if Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are capable of being the best player in a fourth quarter, Kyrie Irving's better than those guys at that. And he's the guy who plays with Luka, as we've said, which is what makes Dallas Dallas and makes Dallas at the top much tougher to game plan for than Boston at the top. Can Holiday be more effective than McDaniels was in making Luka work hard and making him work very hard for his points? You had talked about the Celtics not fouling. As we said, you know, can Doncic break that? Is Doncic so much I think a he's singular force on offense that they have to foul him? Of course he is. If anybody is, it's him.
Yeah.
Of course. But then again, you look at if everything is clicking for Boston, especially with the first two games being played at home, then there are definite avenues to seeing the Celtics win this. Before I wrap up and give my prediction, I talked about this a little bit when we discussed Irving and Doncic back in the regular season and devoted a show to them. I mentioned this about how incensed I was, how at the end of last season, Dallas tanked to ensure that they didn't make a play-in spot, and how grossed out I was by that, and that taste was still lingering for me regarding that team at the beginning of this season, and would the basketball gods kind of make them accountable for that abomination? It is the ultimate validation for Mark Cuban or whoever the decision makers on the Mavericks were that, if as again, and as unseemly to say the least, as that end of the year horrible decision was on the part of the Mavericks, I think if you asked any Mavericks fan, are you all right not making the play-in this year, if we can guarantee that we're going to be in the finals next year, I think everybody would take that exchange. So it turns out that somehow the Mavericks knew what they were doing, because after ending the season that way, they're one of two teams that has a chance to end the season as the NBA champions. For me, I can see the ways that Dallas can win. I could see the ways that Boston can win. If Luka Doncic is going to ultimately be considered one of the greatest players of all time, and throughout his career, all signs have pointed to being the case, he's only displayed seasons that indicate that he's going to be one of the greatest ever. But in order to ultimately be considered one of the greatest ever, not just one of the most talented, but one of the greatest players ever, he's got to start winning championships. And there's no time like the present. And they're there, they're here. And my pick is Mavericks in six.
Ooh, I love it. Oh my God, our collective energy. A couple of points. First, you expertly teased through the Mavericks' on purpose collapse last year. Of course, what it gained them was Derek Lively. So that's another thing. If you ask Mavericks fans, would you take not even making the play-in if you get a 20-year-old from Duke who can jump through the building? I mean, and be an unexpectedly really, really good passer and work with Luka like they've known each other their whole lives back in Slovenia. I mean, this is what we're talking about, Derek Lively. So, yeah, I mean, the basketball gods in this case said, you know what? You've suffered enough because of your embarrassment at doing what you did. You know, and also the basketball gods didn't punish Cleveland, really, although Bickerstaff did lose his job. That's a whole other story. Let's bring it back to Dallas. You mentioned Kyrie and the return to Boston. I'm fascinated in this because, remember, Kyrie called the city of Boston racist. He stomped his foot on that stupid leprechaun, and a fan threw a water bottle at him. I mean, there was a lot of there. You know, he feuded with the younger players. But then Kyrie did this press conference the other day where he said, look, I'm just not that person anymore. Does that, you know, and he's right. Like when he said it, I was like, yeah, that doesn't really sound like this guy who's talking to me right now with the keffiyeh and who's a Muslim and who's, you know, married or has a kid. And it's a different human than the guy who was in Boston. And I hope the fans take that into account and don't act like typical, Boston yahoos when he goes out on the court. Now, if they do that, two things are going to happen. The first is Luka's going to take it personally because he loves Kyrie and you don't want Luka mad. The second, and that's going to be one of the things, I think, the stories of this series, frankly, is Boston pissing Luka off. The second thing is that, remember, Kyrie's not the only returning prodigal son, but Kristaps Porzingis. Not only going back to Dallas, Shiraz, but this was something I heard on a podcast that blew my mind. Because of, you know, various injuries and this, that, and the other, this is Kristaps' first return to Dallas since he left the organization. Kyrie's been back in Boston 100 times. You know, this is the first time they're going to see Kristaps again. The reports of bad blood between him and Luka. Luka denies it, but Chandler Parsons says it's true. That's a big kerfuffle right now. But either way, you know, Kristaps is going to hear it from the Dallas faithful, particularly if Boston gives it to Kyrie. It's all just going to be part of the drama of what I think is going to be an exceptionally talented series. Everyone is saying this is Jason Tatum's time to shine. This is Jason Tatum marking himself in Celtics history. This is Jason Tatum winning the finals MVP. Poppycock. Best player wins. Luka Doncic, Mavs in six.
I agree with you that Kyrie recognizes that he's got a really good thing going with his career and his life and does not want to enter this series or go into Boston wearing the black hat. Mm-hmm. I don't think that he's looking to add any extra subplots. I think he's looking to win a championship. And as far as Tatum goes, I just have never considered Tatum on that level of this is his time. I feel like he's an all-star forward. Mm-hmm. And it's really great to be an all-star forward in the NBA. That means you're an amazing ball player.
Amazing.
But to me, Jason Tatum is not the caliber of player who is going to have a legacy, who is going to be what he didn't. So if Jason Tatum wins finals MVP in a Celtics win over a team that has Luka Doncic, I will have been wrong yet again.
Yeah, and but you did pick on what is the question. I mean, people say it. You know, Boston is the better team. Dallas has the best player. Jason Tatum, I think for them to win this series, needs at least in two or three of these games to be the best player on the floor. And that is a heck of a challenge. That's the true Mission Impossible. And I don't think he can do it. And like you, I have been wrong before. I had the Suns over the T-Wolves, for God's sakes. But you know, the Mavs in the final, feel great about that. I feel great about this podcast, Shiraz. I'm looking forward to getting it out.
Me too, man. I'm very excited about this finals. I feel like I have a little extra rooting interest in it because I so vociferously don't want one of the teams to win.
Exactamundo, which is a lot more fun than Pacers Celtics, where all I was rooting for was a meteor. yo. Coughs get the best of me, but like Steven Tyler said, it's not the cough that carries you off, it's the coffin that they carry you off in. So for everybody out there listening, please stay frosty. This is the Edge of Sports podcast, brought to you by The Nation magazine. For Arya Shirazi, I'm Dave Zirin. We are out of here. Peace.